What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 250 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We have a fantastic episode for you tonight, coming to you a little bit earlier in the week than we normally do, recording on a Tuesday night instead of a Thursday. That is because I am leaving, going out of town bright and early tomorrow morning, leaving on my honeymoon, so going to be gone and missing the rest of this week and all of next week. And then we will be back with episode 251 on the normal Friday release on the 17th. So we wanted to go ahead and get an episode out early for you guys. We're going to be talking about, we finally both finished the legendary story. So we're going to briefly share our thoughts on that. And then in lieu of doing a full breakdown, because it's still pretty early in the season, we're just going to talk about, we've each picked five weapons that we are targeting pretty hard right now that we're looking for our god rolls on. So we're going to talk about the five weapons we are most excited about that have been revealed so far. There are obviously some more weapons that are going to be revealed this weekend with the raid and everything like that. Very excited to talk about those too when I get back. But first, let's go ahead and get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. And how are you doing this evening, Kit?
Mercules, I am doing pretty fantastic. It has been a super fun week of Destiny, and I have had an absolute blast so far. And I feel like I just have an incredible amount left to dive into. With the new season and the new expansion, both, it's an exciting amount of fun to look forward to. How about you, man?
I've been doing great. Been playing a ton of Destiny. Obviously, finished up the Legendary campaign. Really had a blast doing that. What an excellent, excellent addition to the story and to the game that this Legendary campaign has been. Also, have been playing a good bit of PvP. Really trying a bunch of different loadouts, actually. Trying a bunch of different things, trying some new stuff that interacts with Void or that fits what I was considering my loadouts better. Trying some of the new weapons that we've got, trying some of the new heavy weapons in particular. Been really having a blast with some of those exotics. Been working with the glaive a little bit, or the glaive, however that's pronounced. I'm sure that
it's glaive.
Glaive. Okay, yeah. I'm done. man, it's still been a long day though. I've been incredibly busy trying to prep. Trying to prep my coworkers for me being gone for 2 weeks right at the beginning of an audit, which is like the worst possible time to leave. So it is a whole bunch of different things, but I am excited to talk Destiny again, even though it's a little bit earlier in the week than we normally do.
Yeah, absolutely. There's never a wrong time to sit down and talk about some Destiny.
Although we also need to do the housekeeping, and I am not even entirely sure if we have any housekeeping to do. Do you know for a fact if we have any additional Patreon news? I don't believe that we've got any podcast reviews that have been added since the last time we recorded, but that's not altogether surprising, seeing it was just a few days ago.
So I do actually have a few things to say on the Patreon front. Now, first off, we are going to want to say a big shout out, thank you to our ongoing sponsors. But before we get to that, I want to start by welcoming three new patrons who've joined us in the past week. And started supporting the podcasts. So big welcome shout out to Garbohydrate. Thank you for your support. Wonder Cameron, thank you for your pledge. We appreciate it. And Xanadars, the Z's are pronounced as accurately as I could manage. Thank you so much for your support. We appreciate it. And thank you to all of our ongoing patrons who continue to support us month in and month out. Your support over the years has been truly incredible, and we are very fortunate to have it. With that in mind, I do want to go ahead and say their names. These are our sponsors, these Guardians have given to us in a massive way, and we want to make sure that we thank them for it every single episode. Thank you to Blackhammer Tech, Starscream S13, A Solitary Bird, This Moment 23, Deacon, Conquer King 420, Askian Monk, Zen SoCal, The Shazzle, and Binary Wolf. We appreciate each and every one of you, and we also appreciate everyone who leaves us a 5-star review. And everyone who leaves us any review, really. Feedback is always good. Although we hope that if you have an issue, that it's something that you can reach out to us before you write a review and potentially, you know, hurt the show's ability to get found. Because that is, as it turns out, you learned this recently. That's possibly the single biggest factor in whether or not our show gets discovered by new Guardians who are looking for Destiny podcast. Good reviews help us a ton. Bad reviews do hurt us. So we hope that you leave us good reviews. And we hope that if there's anything we can do to improve the show, that you reach out to us personally on Twitter or in Discord. Speaking of patrons, though, I don't want to forget to say that I was able to confirm with Patreon that we've got some merch that is being fulfilled. It's not been shipped yet, but it's in the process, that fulfillment process. So a lot of people going to be looking to receive some stuff. I think we may yet have one more shipment from the 2021 Patrons Rewards next month. So I'm going to keep my eyes out and make sure that everyone gets their stuff. And if you're concerned that maybe you thought you were going to get a reward and you don't, over the next couple of months, please do let me know. We'll make sure that we get you taken care of. And yeah, there we have it.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, with no new podcast reviews that have come up on the aggregator, that makes this the shortest housekeeping we have done in what feels like months, keeping it well under 10 minutes, clocking in around 6.5. Isn't that fantastic? So that means we can dive right into the meat and potatoes of this episode. Again, as we mentioned at the top of the show, that Legendary Story campaign, man.
Holy
absolutely
cow.
Incredible. Are we still going to avoid spoilers or can we talk about it now that we're saying this up front before we dive into anything? Should we put a spoiler warning now so that we can talk freely about the Legendary Story, since we're not going to have another show for like 2 more weeks? I feel like we're a weekend. I feel like everybody who's wanted to beat the Legendary Story has probably beat the Legendary Story by now.
I don't know. It's a tough question. I really want to talk about it. I'm wondering if maybe we should talk about the guns we're going to chase first and then let people know second half of the show, it's going to be full of spoilers.
Well,
what do you say?
Well, why don't we do it the other way around? Why don't we talk about it now and then I'll put a timestamp in so that they can skip all of this stuff if they don't want to.
All right.
I will just have to remember. Let's see what time. So spoilers start at about 7.5 minutes in. Potentially, I don't know that spoilers are going to start exactly at 7.5 minutes in, but somewhere around there. So I just want to be able to talk freely. So if you are still listening after this, there is a potential that you do get spoiled for the story. So check the podcast description for the timestamp of when you can begin listening again when we talk about the weapons we're chasing. But man, that Legendary Story. So first off, a ton of missions, like actually a lot of missions.
Yeah.
Felt like a very, very meaty campaign from the very beginning. And if it does not set the tone for what type of challenge it's going to be early on, I believe you soloed the entire thing. I did the entire thing in a 3-man, and I can say it was honestly. Now I've never done a raid blind, right? But I've done Presage blind, I've done Whisper, I've done stuff like that. This was honestly the hardest content I've ever done in Destiny in terms of the amount of wipes it took me to get through it. Now, granted, I was running with two new lights, like two brand new players. So diving straight into the Legendary campaign with two brand new players who had really not optimized their loadouts at all for this was definitely a challenge. The enemies were super tanky, very lethal. Bosses had a significant amount of health. One of the guys accidentally, bless his heart, forgot to progress the quest halfway through it by forgetting to talk to Ikora. And so when we finished the campaign, we realized he was stuck on step 11.
Ouch.
And so we had to go back and we redid the entire campaign on, not the entire campaign, the second half of the campaign on normal. And it was a breeze.
Yeah.
Like so fast, like nearly one phasing Savathun at the end, just laughing our way through it. Hardly any deaths. It was a night and day experience compared to the Legendary one.
Yeah. So I've only replayed the first mission on normal. I played the entire campaign solo on Legendary my first time through, completely blind, no input, no help. And it was intense. Figuring out the mechanics in some sections definitely took me a minute. You know, I had to sit and really think about it. I want to give major props to the design team for the hints and the sort of kind of the nudges in the right direction that they put in for the puzzles. I felt like it was just enough to get me thinking about what I needed to think about without giving the answer away. And when I was able to get, so there were the rune key puzzles where you had to shoot the runes in the right order and only the right runes, right? The first time I walked up to that, I had no idea what I was supposed to. I was like, I assume I'm supposed to shoot something, but I don't know what I'm looking for. Once I got it, I was able to get the rest of those puzzles on my first try every time, and it felt really good. And I felt like that was a great kind of way to break up the combat heavy mechanics that the rest of the campaign had. Like I really enjoyed having to think my way through some of these encounters.
That rune key stuff, hilariously, the first time I went through, I was like, oh, I don't know. And I literally, I shot three runes randomly and it progressed the puzzle. And I was like, oh, that's probably not helpful. I was like, I have no idea what I just did. Like, I just picked three runes and randomly shot them. And it was like, trial passed or whatever, progress open. And I was like, oh. And but the two new lights I was playing were like, what did you do? I was like, I literally don't know. Like, I just picked three runes at random and shot them and it progressed it. And I was like, now I don't actually know what we're supposed to do here at all.
So my solution the first time was to just shoot each set of runes once until I figured out which one was first. And then I shot that one and then I just worked from left to right until I brute forced it. But somewhere along the way, it gave me a hint that explained spoilers, waiting, that I was looking for what made a specific set of runes different. And I was just like, oh, that makes sense. And so then I brute forced the second one. And then the third one, I was like, it's that one. Got it. Yeah. It was a good puzzle. Definitely, I think a classic Destiny puzzle.
It's a super fine line that they were able to straddle. And they did this with Presage 2, but it felt fair to me as a not super experienced PV endgame player, not a blind raider, although I have done some raids like semi-blind before where like none of us have watched a guide except for one person who only vaguely knows what they're doing. And like we still have to trial and error figure it out. So like that's the closest I've come to like doing anything blind besides Presage. But Presage I actually did blind and I did solo. And I enjoyed that so, so much. And I was like longing for more content that was like that. And every one of these missions and the puzzles that were in between them felt that same amount of difficult but fair, where every time I did something wrong, I felt like I was making progress towards doing it right.
Yeah.
And honest to God, I don't know how they struck that balance as well as it did. Maybe it was just like the perfect difficulty for me and my fire team. And so like I'm a really big fan of it. But it feels like from the feedback that I've been hearing that it was really that way for a pretty broad spectrum of Destiny players. And if that's the case, that is an impressive, impressive achievement.
It really is. These missions on Legendary, it felt like each section where you're just trying to get to the next chest was like an individual, like Destiny 1 Nightfall strike. Where I was trying to beat the enemies, beat the mechanics, not make any mistakes. And if I made a mistake, the fight was reset. So going solo with no one to revive me when I messed up was... Boy, there were times when I was just like, okay, I'm not going to beat it tonight. I need to go do something else. And fortunately, I was able to get through while doing fairly few side quests, which is really how I like to play the story. I like to do it straight through without breaks, but the Legendary story actually forced me to take a step back a couple of times. I went out of my way to go and shape a rocket launcher specifically to help me take down the vehicles and the bosses that I was starting to encounter after the first couple of missions, because I felt like I needed something specific. I just wanted to craft a weapon. Like, I'm going to be honest. This was an excuse, but I wanted something specific. And You know, I have a lasting impression rocket launcher already, but it didn't have tracking. And I was like, oh, I can craft a Hakke lasting impression rocket launcher? Sold. Yeah, it's it was a real challenge. Like, I really felt like I had to actually stop and like think about my loadout in PvE in a way that I don't often do. Like you, I'm not a regular visitor to in-game PvE content. I know everyone out there who runs the Grandmasters on a regular basis or any of the higher difficulty Nightfalls is like, you don't think about your loadout? Like, what are you even doing? But I don't, you know, I don't run that content regularly. I think about my loadout heavily in PvP.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a fun experience where I really had to stop and think about the fight and what I needed to do. And then just get out Jotun. And yeah.
I felt like it was the perfect level for me where I felt like there's a level of like cultivating your loadout where it's like you have to change classes, right? Like, or like you have to completely alter what it is that you're doing. And I feel like that's a very extreme level of loadout crafting that's almost entirely reserved for you know, GMs and stuff like that. I think that's a bit too much. It's not really a style that I'm a fan of. But in our fire team, only one of us had to change their subclass even. And they went from an Arc Strider to a Void Hunter. And so we ended up beating it with two Void Hunters and a Void Warlock. And I felt like it was the perfect level where it made us think about what weapons we wanted to take into it, but it still let us run the class that we were most comfortable with. And I didn't feel like I was obligated to switch to like a Well Lock or a Ward of Dawn Titan or something like that, right? Which so to me it was perfect, right? Because yeah. My buddies who are new lights, they're not super comfortable with a ton of stuff. So asking them to switch to an entirely different subclass that they don't have any experience with would have been pretty painful. So the fact that it didn't make them do that, it just made them maybe try a couple different weapons. Where before we went into an encounter, after we'd wipe on an encounter a couple times, we'd be like, okay, hold on, let's review what we're using right now. Like, what special are you using? What heavy are you using? What other heavies have you gotten? Do you have anything with lasting impressions? Let's try to look at it this way. There were two different encounters that we had to stop on. Both encounters we kind of came back to with fresh eyes the next morning and were able to beat on our first attempt. The first one was that Scorn boss that we really, really struggled with. I swear we must have wiped like 20 or 30 times on it.
Which one was this again?
It was the one with the three rooms, and each room had a different shielded captain in it. Mm. And the Scorn boss would chase you around the room, basically. So that was really, really difficult. The first strategy we attempted to employ was me like baiting the boss around the room and the two new lights going room to room and killing the captain and killing and then destroying the crystal. But what we found is that he actually wouldn't chase you into the room. He would just stand outside of the room during the non-damage phase. And so when we found that, then we realized that we could all three go to separate rooms with our paired damages, destroy the captains, destroy the crystals simultaneously, then come back and deal damage. And as soon as we figured that out, we were able to beat it pretty easily. But I love that it felt like every encounter, like the rune puzzles, it felt like every encounter was a puzzle. And you do the first part of it, and maybe you die immediately. And then you're like, okay, that wasn't right. And then you do it correct. And then you do the next part of it and you wipe and you reset. And then it's like you're putting all these pieces together to do all the parts of the engagement correctly. And I swear to you that it felt exactly, it was less hard, but it felt like when I played the Forsaken campaign 30 light levels under solo as part of a playtest at Bungie when I was there. And that was really brutal. That took 2 hours for me to beat the machinist. That was a bit much. But it felt like that level of challenge where I actually knew, okay, this is the boss's first phase. This is the boss's second phase. This is the group of adds that appears while we do damage. This is the order we need to take them out. That's a feeling I've never had in Destiny PvE, but I had had many times in Halo Legendary campaign missions. And to have that in Destiny just made me grin from ear to ear like the entire time I was doing it.
Yeah. No, I felt very much the same way. It was really an experience of figuring out the exact sequence of steps that I needed to take, and then executing those steps, and making sure that was kind of the other interesting thing playing this solo is I felt like I very rarely had a safe spot unless I like really earned that safe spot. And even then, I knew that it was only going to stay safe long enough for me to get my health back, because something was going to happen to force me to move again. Yeah, that Scorn boss in particular, boy, I ran so many laps around that room. My guardian is like in phenomenal shape. Like, few exos have this level of cardio, I swear. Yeah. I ran a lot. It's sort of a miracle I didn't get dizzy playing it, because I was just continuously running in circles. But boy, it felt so good. Honestly, when I finally beat it, it was almost just like, that wasn't that hard. Why couldn't I do this the first time? But it felt really good because the final run just went perfectly smoothly. Like, everything just sort of happened the way it was supposed to.
Have you ever gotten a sense of accomplishment like that from many other PvE activities in Destiny?
I would say not very many. Something like that, maybe like the first time I figure out how to get the heroic public events to trigger, which I haven't yet done on the Throne World. But I feel like I really need to go in there with a fire team in order to make that happen. I think relying on blueberries is in a big way not working out for me. But yeah, I think getting that to trigger the first few times and kind of getting good at playing those heroics until they become easy is a similar feeling, but it's not on the same level. Beating dungeons for the first time feels like that. Yeah. But even then, the enemies aren't as beefy for the most part. So
I would love to see this level of difficulty applied to more activities.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, I like the Lucent Hive so much more than I like champions. It really shows you how limited the interaction is with champions when you compare how many different attack styles, how many different things you can do to beat the Lucent Hive, how you have to treat them as opponents. They felt like, and I might have been wrong, but they felt like some of the smartest AI that we've seen in Destiny 2 enemies. Like, their decision making, like, I got killed by a couple of grenades that were thrown by the Lucent Hive Knights.
Yeah.
The Lightbearer Knights.
They are deadly
and
accurate.
I would get killed by a grenade, and I'd be like, no shit. Like, that's insane. People in PvP aren't that good with grenades.
Yeah.
And like, it was really, really a fun challenge. It was really awesome. And then comparatively, when I went back to do like a Nightfall, and I ran into an overload champion, it's like, oh, this is not quite as fun. Or I ran into an unstoppable champion, it's like, yeah. I would really, really like to see that legend difficulty applied to maybe some dungeons or maybe some more of those, you know, exotic weapon quest missions. Like Vox Obscura was pretty fun and challenging under level. But then we had a buddy who was at level who joined into it and just like kind of stomped stuff. So it's like, man, I would have liked that to have kind of maintained the same difficulty. It's really, really a huge black and white, you know, noticeable difference when you go from legend difficulty to just like normal anything.
Yeah.
Like, stuff is so squishy. I think that the legend campaign was enough of a success that I would like to see this difficulty applied to more activities, because I feel like it's a great in between the absolute ridiculousness that is GMs with champions and tons of tanky enemies and getting one shot by everything, which I personally don't find that to be a ton of fun. And then the absolute cakewalk that is like normal Destiny, which I also personally don't find to be a ton of fun. I think that's maybe why I've stayed out of PvP or PvE so long, is like normal Destiny is too easy, and I don't like the type of challenge that GMs present. And Legend campaign to me was like that sweet spot right in the middle.
The Lucent Brood definitely really adds something to the game. Honestly, part of me actually wanted them to be even more aggressive than they were, because there were definitely times when I was able to find a place where they wouldn't go, or where they would hesitate before going. Which may be a smart play on their part, but if they had pushed me, they might have killed me. So, you know, it's one of those things where I was just like, they're smart, and they're aggressive, their attacks are powerful and accurate, and I definitely always felt like they were a threat every time they were on the field. It felt good to be able to outplay them. And I definitely felt like when I was beating a Lucent Hive, it's because I was outmaneuvering them in order to put damage into them, rather than playing rock, paper, scissors.
Can I just say, I want to move on here to talk about the final boss fight in Savathun.
Yeah.
But that immediately triggered a recollection in my head. Thank goodness for checkpoints and this. Like,
oh,
thank
gosh.
Goodness for this system of, like, you have a checkpoint, you can leave, you can come back and start from the last, you know, rally banner that you just put down. That was huge.
Yeah.
Because what it felt like is, it felt like I always had a goal. Like, okay, even if we don't beat the mission, if we beat this encounter, we get a checkpoint, and then I don't feel so bad about leaving and coming back. Like,
yeah.
Just that change alone was huge for my quality of life in the campaign. But Savathun, ooh,
wow.
Ooh, we used those checkpoints. That was the other encounter that we literally could not beat. Gave up, came back to it, really went hard optimizing those loadouts, completely changed up the strategy that we were using, and then we were able to beat it, you know, when we logged on the next morning. But man, how did you do that solo? Did you find it to be pretty challenging, or was that actually kind of easier for you?
So it was definitely a challenge. A couple of my early runs, just stupid mistakes got me, or like surprise Thrall, because the lack of radar made Thrall a serious threat. Like, if I wasn't constantly checking my six, I would just randomly get whacked, and then I would turn around and then something would explode and I would die. So yeah, I learned pretty quick in that mission that I needed to be double checking at certain points. But the other thing that really ended up screwing up a couple of my runs in that mission was the shield that she had, that you had to be inside in order to damage her, because I was using a lasting impression launcher to get that bonus damage. I would hit her, and then if I got blasted or accidentally dodged outside the shield because I was constantly riding the edge, it would explode, and I would just be like, no. But yeah, thank goodness for checkpoints. Thank goodness for the generous heavy ammo availability, both through dropping the raid banners and also just through drops from enemies within each mission, because without that heavy ammo, I might have still beat some of those missions, but it would have taken me a long time and a lot of hiding. Yeah. So that's one that I had to change my loadout to beat, though. I ran almost the entire story with my glaive and just various primaries. Crimson, I ran a lot because, you know, free healing against those red bars was really helpful. But
how about that rally banner change, though? So we could just use unlimited rally banners at the beginning of each encounter. I love that change.
Yeah.
I hope that is something that expands its way into a lot of Destiny PvE content, because it completely changes the way I was approaching encounters when we had guaranteed the same amount of ammo and a super at the beginning of every encounter. It felt like we could actually strategize and run the same strategy over and over because our starting place was the same. It actually has made me look back on previous Destiny PvE content and be like, man, what an antiquated way of doing things.
Well, it feels really smart to me because it allows the designers to have pre-balanced these encounters under the assumption that everyone has heavy, special, and a super. And so everything can be balanced around that rather than having to balance it around, well, we don't know what they have. Some people might make it here with everything full. Some people might make it here with just their primary. And we need to give them all a good experience. Like, this is super smart, right? Just puts everyone on a level footing at the beginning of a major encounter. And it does. It makes you feel like you get to use your entire loadout and use all the tools at your disposal. Even if the encounter is maybe balanced up to account for that, it doesn't feel bad because we can't tell the difference.
How'd you feel about the story reveals that we got on this? Were you able? I missed one of the cutscenes. I had to go back and watch it online. I'm not sure that I kind of expected the way that they were building Savathun up as a complex character. I kind of was expecting that she wasn't going to be inherently evil, right? Like, they did it first with the Fallen, and then they did it with the Cabal. And I was wondering if they were going to be able to do it with the Hive, because the Hive just seemed like inherently evil creatures. But then you explain that the Traveler was actually going to grant them power, and the denizens of the deep, the worm gods, tricked them and basically told them that the Traveler was going to destroy them, or a cataclysm was going to come, and basically tricked them into accepting these worms, which then continued to feast off them. It seems that Oryx was 100% on board with it. It was like, hell yeah, let's destroy some civilizations.
Yeah.
And Zeva Wrath also seems like she might be really on board with it. And Savathun was maybe the wisest of them, and the Traveler voluntarily granted her the power, but then doesn't resurrect her at the end. And Amaro just pieces out. Which, does Amaro sound like James Spader to you? Does he sound like the guy who voiced Ultron in Age of Ultron for the Avengers? Doesn't it sound like him? I don't know that it is him. I don't think they've confirmed the voice actor, but doesn't it sound like the voice actor's doing the like Ultron voice?
It kind of does, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of the whole time I was listening to him.
I didn't watch that enough to get that, but now that you say it, it does sort of come off that way. Well, I think Amaro peaced out so that he didn't get crushed in our fist.
Get squished.
Yeah.
He saw how good we'd gotten at squishing the Hive Ghost, which, please give us finisher animations for the Hive Ghost.
Yes.
Like, please, I beg of you. I enjoy squishing them, but I really want to be able to like roundhouse kick one or something.
I'd like to just be able to come up and just like do like a clap and just smash it like a fly. That'd be dope.
Brutal.
Or maybe bust out like a fly swatter made of light.
Mm.
I feel like there are a lot of things they could go with here.
I wonder if they were worried that we might start having too much fun, because they were like, oh, you're supposed to feel, you know, weird about crushing the ghost. But I was like, oh, it's just so satisfying, though.
What I'd like to know is, when are we going to get a crucible mode where when you kill someone, you can finish their ghost?
That would be very brutal. Canonically, that would be horrendous.
Yeah, it would be entirely illegal. This feels like a Drifter Run fight ring.
I thought maybe what you could do is you could like tag their ghost. Mm. So here's actually what I thought is, like, if you kill someone and their ghost pops up and you shoot their ghost, then they cannot revive. But like, it doesn't, you know, you're not actually destroying the ghost. It's like, it's just a rules of engagement type thing where if you shoot the ghost or you tag the ghost, they can't revive. So you could prevent revives on the other team if they were in like a really bad position and they couldn't keep you off the ghost, right? I thought something like that might actually be like a fun twist on an elimination style game mode.
I'd also just like to have finishers in PvP at this point. I'm going to be completely honest. Part of me just really
Halo
wants
Reach
them.
Did it.
Yeah.
Halo Reach did it. Halo Reach had great assassination animations and they were super fun. And come on now, microtransactions. How many of those could you sell if people could use them in PvP?
It certainly would be more appealing. You get a fast finisher animation. You've got an edge. So that's the pay to win problem right there.
Anyways, the story yes. Wise, how'd you feel about the story?
I really enjoyed it. I felt like it really explored the Hive and Savathun in a way that I wasn't entirely expecting. And it seemed like it had a lot of good like twists, and it also did a great job of exploring this throne world and asking, or at least inviting me to ask, a lot of questions about what the heck is going on, and who's the witness, and what is it that he, she, or it witnessed, and why won't they just leave us alone and let us play in the Crucible all day?
Did you love the final reveal?
Oh my God.
I don't even know what it is. I mean, was that the witness? I'm not actually sure.
That's
with
implied.
The mega mind looking thing with the heads bubbling out of its head and the giant eyes. I thought that was nice and spooky. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Oh man, I had chills watching that. I was just like, what the? I was like, okay.
It's kind of amazing how well not only did the Legendary campaign play great, but the story missions, the cutscenes, the dialogue, it was all fantastic. I mean, that's easily to me the best story that they presented in game.
It was so cohesive.
Yeah, it made sense. It was fun. I actually cared about it to where I was like excited to see the next cutscene, and I was excited to see what happened next. I was excited to play the next mission. It was a great cohesive story. It wasn't told entirely through lore, although lore and some of the side quests do add to it. But the actual story itself, just as a freestanding story, was easy enough to understand, easy enough to follow, interesting enough. It wasn't super predictable, but it kind of made you feel smart if you figured out a little bit of the mystery on the front end, and then they confirmed it for you on the back end. I mean, it was really, really well written. It felt like an episodic TV show where each campaign mission was an episode.
You know, I had that exact thought toward the end. I was just thinking to myself, it's like, I feel like I've been like living through this TV show. And because I've had to replay these missions so many times, like it really feels like I've like earned my way through it. Like I've really kind of been in the trenches of this story. It's going to stick with me.
Well, what it did a good job of, and I think this is the Legendary campaign did a good job of this, it made it feel like there are actual consequences because of how difficult it was to beat these enemies. I didn't feel like a lot of times they've built up people to be the big bad guys, and then you just absolutely steamroll them. Like Curse of Osiris was potentially the worst they've ever done at that, right? Where the final boss of Curse of Osiris was basically an on-rails engagement. It was so laughably easy. And it just totally killed any narrative tension that they had built. But it was so difficult to beat these bosses. I actually felt like they were hive gods for once.
I sort of felt like Warmind actually was the most anticlimactic boss battle.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That definitely wasn't great. Zol was... And a strike, man, a strike. Like, and what's funny is these story missions were harder than like any of the baseline strikes that we've ever gotten.
Yeah. Yeah, Man, I'm glad they're replayable. I don't know that I'm ready for it now, but I am going to have to go back through and beat them all again on my Warlock. And I really feel like I'm going to be cheating myself if I go back through and do just the regulars now.
I would kill for a Legend difficulty strike playlist.
That would be something.
I'd absolutely kill for it. Because if you notice, a lot of these story missions were almost set up more like strikes than they were like normal story missions. It was really like we got 8 strikes back to back to back in terms of how there was like an encounter, the next encounter, you know, it was really, really interesting. I would just absolutely love to see this put into strikes. Not Nightfalls. That's not what I want. I don't want the champions. I don't want like all that insane modifier stuff, just like the straight legend difficulty built into strikes. And I would probably spend a significant amount more time in PvE if that were the case. But overall, you know, if we're going to pull from Beneath Twin Suns here, how do you score the Legendary story campaign for Witch Queen out of 10 points?
I am going to give it a 10. I was absolutely blown away.
A masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah. They, you know, when they came out up front and they were calling it the definitive Destiny campaign, I was like, All right, let's see what that means. Those are tall words right there.
They drew some heavy comparisons too. They were saying it's, you know, it's Halo. They were calling it a lot of things that, man, set the bar pretty high. I was honestly not expecting that much.
Yeah.
But it blew my expectations out of the water.
Yeah, it really did. Truly, I was expecting it to play out like, you know, like a Nightfall, like a match made level Nightfall difficulty. And I don't know what it was. I don't know where it falls on the difficulty scale, to be honest. It was its own thing. But every single piece of it was so well put together. And so, I don't know. It was just the combination of the difficult enemies and the challenging mechanics really made me feel like there is room in Destiny for more activities like on this level with the heavier mechanics, because that's one of the things that's missing from the Nightfall playlist that I think made this a lot more engaging and interesting for me. The Nightfall playlist, the mechanics are how well can you craft your build in order to destroy the enemies, and do you have the right rock, paper, scissors combo to take out the champions? But this was about juggling mechanics that require you to think and remember things and then execute on those things with challenging sets of enemies. It was very different than playing Strikes to me. Strikes are about speedrunning in my mind. And this, I had to be careful. It wasn't about speedrunning. It was about doing it right the first time. Or the fifth time.
Or the 30th time in our case. Yeah, you really, you know, you have to stop and smell the roses when you're getting your butt kicked over and over and over again in an engagement. But huge credit to them. There aren't many games where me losing 30 times in a row would have me coming back being like, I'm going to do it again. It's like that crazed, goofy meme that's like, and I'll do it again. It's like me getting stomped by Sabathun for the 30th time. It's like, oh, and I'll do it again too. I loved it so much. Everything about it was fun. All right, so this is somewhat surprisingly, based off the first 45 minutes of the show, this is actually not the PvE podcast for Massive Breakdowns. This is, of course, I'm sure they had a much, much easier time than we did. I'm sure they went in, optimized, and just shredded through everything. And they were like, oh, it was a nice jaunt in the park. But for us, we're much more the PvP crowd. And we kind of got a plethora of stuff to talk about this season.
We do.
In terms of weapons that they're giving us.
We do. And I definitely have to say, I was not going into this like, I had like, I think like 12 bounties that I turned in ahead of time. So I was in no way like far along the experience chain. I did not have suppressing glaive, which people have told me makes it a lot easier. Oh, well.
Yeah. I don't do any prep. I'm just totally awesome. I don't do any prep before the season at all.
No.
Like I've just never really cared to do that. I'm not trying to day one raid race. I don't care about getting my XP up. I saw someone like 3 days in that was already like level 50 on their season pass.
Someone's tweeted that they're level 100.
That's a bit much. Anyways, so stuff I do care about, though. I do care about the weapons. I care about the weapons quite a lot. And as far as weapons go, this is quite the smorgasbord for us. So we have so many weapons, nearly 50 weapons. Some of the weapons aren't even out yet. What we're going to do is we're going to take the top five that we are most that we're hunting right now. The five that we're most excited about. We're going to talk about them. Somewhat amazingly, one of the five that I'm actually the most excited about is a hand cannon, which
it is truly shocking.
Yeah.
But it's a good cannon.
Look at me. I'm the anime profile picture now, right? No, I'm not going to run it with a shotgun, but, the Cantata 57, I got a drop of one and it had a really, really darn good roll. I ended up getting, I want to say it was accurized rounds. It was accurized rounds. I'm just gonna pull it up on Dim. I'm gonna tell you right now. Small bore accurized rounds, Eye of the Storm rangefinder with a range masterwork.
Ooh,
is what I got on that. Yeah,
that's crispy.
So even I was like, oh wow, like I can't say no to this. So I equip it, and holy crap! I don't know if it's the Sura synergy perk, which is the intrinsic that gives it bonus handling and reduces flinch after reloading, or what it is, but it is the crispiest, best feeling hand cannon I have ever used in Destiny 2. I put it on and was using it in PvE and was like, whoa, this thing feels good. It might be that the recoil direction, because it's at 85, is almost perfectly vertical, and the stability is pretty darn high for a hand cannon. That range is excellent. It has rangefinder, which is great. But I took it into PvP, and the first kill I got with it was like the easiest three tap I've ever had with a hand cannon. And I was like, oh, baby. And so I want to be like, I'm chasing a better roll of it, but I'm actually not. Like, this is, like, I pretty much already got basically the best roll, or one of the best rolls. Now, I could improve it maybe a tiny bit. But first, you know, let's talk stats. What is it that makes it so good? Well, first off, its stats are comparable. Like, its base stats are pretty comparable to Aya's Luna on its own. It's got a little bit less range, 51 range compared to Aya's Luna's 56. 56 stability compared to Aya's Luna's 68, 57 handling compared to Aya's Luna's 54, 51 reload speed compared to Aya's Luna's 50, 82 aim assist compared to 80, 85 recoil direction compared to 96. Both have 11 in the mag. It is an excellent feeling gun. I don't think I can overstate how actually effective like the Suros intrinsic perk is, though. It's actually really, really nice because you can already stack that with unflinching perks on the chest piece. And, you know, you guys have heard me rant about how much I hate flinch on primary weapons. And hand cannons are, of course, one of the worst dealers of flinch in the game. But to basically have flinch entirely negated by, you know, for a short period of time after reloading, because I'm mixing it with the unflinching mods on the armor, I reload all the time anyways. It feels like I'm not even having to do anything, and I'm just getting a free, another free unflinching mod. And it busts the handling, too, so the gun constantly feels great.
Yeah, it's Seraph Synergy is truly a great PvP perk. I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat that. It's just a really solid origin perk for the Crucible. This gun has some great perk options as well, and relatively small perk pools, which makes your odds of getting a roll worth having pretty high. That said,
not craftable though, sadly.
Not craftable yet.
No hand cannons craftable.
No.
As of yet, which is very interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting that they gave us a hand cannon accuracy mod on the artifact, but did not give us any craftable hand cannons. I'm not sure what to make of that. But Eye of the Storm, I think, is really tough to beat in that first trade slot. That is honestly the perk that I would want on that gun. I think if I got that, almost anything else that I got would be playable.
But your consolation prizes are fantastic. You also got moving target and rangefinder. You got Vorpal. You got Focused Fury, which I'm less super stoked on for PvP, but is probably great for PvE. I mean, this is just a monstrous PvP hand cannon.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can get Eye of the Storm and Opening Shot, which in most encounters means you have more or less perfect accuracy throughout the entire magazine. Because you shoot, you get shot, Eye of the Storm activates to take over for Opening Shot, and you just don't have Bloom. Like, why? Who wants Bloom anyway, right? So this gun is just like, you hate Bloom? Play with me. It's amazing.
Every perk on this gun is, you know, not every perk. Like, it's got Hipfire, which obviously I wouldn't be stoked about on hand cam, but Eye of the Storm, Rapid Hit, Heating Up, Compulsive Reloader, which is one of the new ones, Steady Hand, which is one of the new ones. All of those are fantastic. The only perk that's not super great in the last column is Timed Payload, right? Which I always try to avoid for PvP.
Right.
You know, I don't want to do a full breakdown of this weapon, you know, necessarily, because I'd like to, at some point in time in the future, visit the world weapons, you know, in their holistic groups, right? But sheesh, if this isn't a great hand cannon, I'm going to keep using the roll I've got. If I get another roll that has, you know, Eye of the Storm moving target or Eye of the Storm opening shot, I'll give it a chance. But I feel very fortunate that the first roll I got was so nearly a perfect roll.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was really some good luck on your part. I did not keep the one drop of that I've noticed getting. If I got in the others, they must have been pretty terrible.
All right. Well, what's the weapon you're either most excited about, either that you already have gotten or that you're still trying to get?
So I got to say, probably the weapon that I was most excited to craft is one that I know it's not meta, but gosh dang, if I just don't love this archetype to death, and I will continue to find ways to use it until someday it becomes truly viable. So I'm very excited about Empirical Evidence, the aggressive burst sidearm. It's a kinetic, which I have been waiting for a kinetic aggressive burst to come back so that I can pair it with longer range energy weapon. And it's craftable, and it has so many great perks to choose from. But the one that I am most excited about is Perpetual Motion. Because this is the type of weapon that I typically play aerial and hip firing, basically 90% of the time. So I am 100% constantly in motion when I have this gun out. So just having a free, you know, plus 10 stability, plus 20 handling, plus 20 reload when I'm using this gun. I mean, who could argue with that? It's absolutely perfect. And then I'm really looking at probably pairing it with like Harmony. At least on my Hunter. For certain other builds, I might consider going with Swashbuckler. But I feel like Harmony, and then pairing it with a shotgun or another one-hit kill weapon that allows me to really just absolutely rake people over the coals with it close range, would be something that would be a ton of fun to do. So
you have always loved the aggressive sidearms.
I have
always.
It's so, and this is a really solid example of the archetype. So I want to go through the stats. I've kind of jumped ahead and done the perks first, which I know is out of order.
Sorry, where does Empirical Evidence come from again? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, so this is one of the weapons you get from the Throne World. It's got that chemical formula on the side that I still honestly don't know what that means, but it looks pretty
salt
cool.
Salt something, right?
Yeah.
It's NaCl and then something
but
else.
It's like salt and mercury and sulfur. I don't know what that I don't know what that is, but apparently you can combine them. So there's some kind of like balanced chemical equation. I don't know. Raid Secrets will figure it out. Anyway, the stats are what we are here to figure out. So Empirical Evidence is in the same spot as Breachlight and Smuggler's Word, which are the older kinetic versions of this gun. So I'll compare it to Breachlight because that's the most recent. So it's got Empirical Evidence has 57 range to Breachlight's 53, 40 stability to Breachlight's 43, 41 handling to Breachlight's 41, 32 reload speed compared to 31, 86 aim assist for Empirical Evidence compared to 83 on Breachlight, 98 recoil direction compared to 82 on Breachlight, and 24 in the mag, which is pretty standard. So overall, fairly standard. The extra high range, I don't mind at all. It's actually much closer to the old Smuggler's Word, which was truly the gun that sparked my love of this archetype. I was never as big a fan of the energy versions. They technically have higher zoom, but for whatever reason, they just never felt the same to me. And I couldn't tell you why that is, but I'm very glad to have it back in the kinetic slot. That's it. That's my pick. I don't know if we need to talk about the rest of the perks. It does have some really solid options, but I don't want to get into a full breakdown on every one of these.
I got an Empirical Evidence, and I tried to make it work. Maybe I didn't get the right roll. I feel like the range, for how much damage it does, and I know that if the range were good, it would be way too easy because you can basically just body shot people down to death.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the lack of range, especially compared to the like adaptive three burst sidearms, really throws me a lot of the times. And so I tried to give it a shot, and I just wasn't really able to make it work. I was a little bit disappointed with it, but maybe I'll have to give it another go.
So these guns, the thing that I love about them is that their body shot time to kill is 0.83 seconds. That's with three bursts. He hit 6 shots to the body, and anybody pretty much goes down. So the way that I play this is it's a counter to people who are rushing me. I can burst them down, and I'm typically jumping in circles around people, hip-firing this into them while I use it. So it's not exactly the most intuitive playstyle, but it is a lot of fun.
It does work. All right, well, I'm going to go talk about my actual favorite weapon then. Because despite my recent conversion to being an anime profile picture, I am still a dad at heart. And it's a pulse rifle. It's peace of mind. This is a kinetic rapid fire. Previously, I was constantly disappointed by my inability to get the time loss spire roll that I wanted from Iron Banner. So I was very excited to see that we were getting another kinetic rapid fire to kind of replace the fact that that had left the perk pool. And lo and behold, one of the very first rolls that I got, I think actually like the second or third roll that I got, extended barrel ricochet rounds, auto-loading holster, which I'm not stoked about, but then elemental capacitor, which I am stoked about because I'm running a void subclass right now. So I get that massive, massive bonus of stability. I think it's almost plus 20 to stability. Yeah. Huge, actually huge. So my stability on this gun is in like the high 80s. Because of extended barrel, I bumped my recoil direction up to 68, but then I went ahead and slapped a counterbalance stock on it just because, so it's up at 83. Actually not entirely sure that I needed it, but I went ahead and put it on there and the gun feels so good I haven't removed it yet. This gun is probably one of the best feeling primary weapons out there. It is laser beam stable with that amount of stability in that recoil direction. The range is surprisingly good. The zoom is 1.9, so that's a decently high zoom. It's not quite the insane, you know, well over 2 that you were able to get with time loss fire. So your range will not be out in the 50s like you could be with time loss fire, but you can easily get into the mid 30s, like have a healthy engagement in the mid 30s, which means you can outrange a lot of the 140 hand cans that haven't spec'd all the way into, you know, range and rangefinder and stuff like that. So it's a great feeling weapon. It is not a really, really strong chaining weapon for sixes. But what I compare it to is we talked about the darkest before, which is the Prophecy Dungeon rapid fire pulse rifle in the energy slot. It's a great dueling weapon. I actually think it's probably one of the best dueling primaries out there. Now, rapid fires kind of get a bad knock with the fast rate of fire. They can be a little bit difficult to control, a little bit difficult to get used to. I will point out that you can slap a full auto mod on them now if you're worried about the rate of fire stuff. That pretty much alleviates that problem. They have for a while been extraordinarily strong, but I only kind of see them used by pretty good players. I don't know if I'm going to be able to take this gun off for a while. It might actually be supplanting the Messenger in my kinetic slot, which is crazy. The reason being the Messenger is so, so good at like chaining kills once I've gotten a kill. But this gun feels so good every time I get a kill. I'm not getting the damage bonuses because I don't have a roll with Harmony, and I'm not even really targeting a roll with Harmony. I really want to stick with extended barrel ricochet rounds. I think that's a great pairing. It gives me a little bit of extra range. I also have a stability masterwork, which helps. I would love to get perpetual motion and moving target. I think if I could get perpetual motion, moving target, a stability masterwork, you know, extended barrel, I'd even take chambered compensator, you know, and sacrifice a couple meters worth of range for some additional stability. But I think I think extended barrel compared or paired with perpetual motion once it's up, which gives you plus 10 to stability. At 79 stability, I think that's probably going to be more than enough, especially when you have moving target as well. So I'm really, really looking forward to that roll. With how good it feels right now, when I've just got the stability bonuses and auto-loading holster, which, you know, does nothing for the actual feel of the gun, I'm extremely excited to see how it feels when I have increased aim assist and still almost as much stability as I have right now.
No, I'm definitely a bit jealous. This is one that I have not yet picked up, but it is on my list. I'll definitely be looking for a good roll from Peace of Mind down the road here. I'm also a big fan of the rapid fire pulses. I used to hate them. Many, many moons go back in Destiny 1. I'm trying to think the one...
Talking about Grasp of Malak,
Grasp of Malak with the Omnigul Strike. Yeah. Because I would help friends farm it, and I was just so sick of it that I think I transferred my dislike onto the weapon. But since then, I've become a convert, and I have to say that having a god-rolled Time Worn Spire that can hit crits out to like 40 plus meters might have helped a little bit. But yeah, I can outrange the messenger on that, so it certainly is appealing. But I'm always open to picking up a new version of that gun because they've become quite a bit of fun. Well, the next gun that I want to talk about is one that I heard from a lot, or I heard a lot about from people on Twitter. I think it's already converted a lot of people who were looking for an energy version of Multimach. Now, it's not quite on the same level in terms of the amount of zoom that Multimach can get. In fact, it's not even close to the same level. But it is in the energy slot, and it does have pretty decent zoom. So let's talk about Funnel Web. I think somebody on Twitter said there is only Funnel Web.
I've heard a lot of people really, really like Funnel Web.
Yeah.
I tried it myself briefly, and I didn't have a great roll, so maybe that's my own fault. But I don't know that I was really blown away with it. You know, I had Focused Fury, Killing Wind. Focused Fury, I don't think is great for an SMG. You know, Killing Wind, Extended Barrel, a good bit of range on it, and I wasn't the biggest fan. Are you telling me that maybe I need to take a deeper look?
I think that you might be able to get a better roll that might do a little more for you. So let's talk about the stats first off. Okay, so it's an energy lightweight submachine gun. So the optimal time to kill is going to be 0.67 seconds. The body shot time to kill with all shots hitting is going to be 1.13. Typically, you're going to see somewhere in between there. But more importantly, the stats are really, really ridiculously good for a lightweight submachine gun. In fact, we have not seen a lightweight submachine gun with stats this good since the Recluse. And I think that is what has people so excited right now. So I'm not really sure what to compare it to because, honestly, most of the other energy lightweight submachine guns are what could be generously described as not good. So I'm going to compare it to the Multimach, even though the Multimach is a kinetic, because that's the one that people love.
I was going to suggest that because that's the one that I personally love. The Multimach is my go-to right now if I'm trying in PvP. So if you can sell me on the Funnel Web compared to the Multimach, you've done a good job.
So we're going to start with the most obvious difference, which is the zoom. So Multimach with a high zoom scope can get up to 1.7, which is crazy high zoom for a submachine gun. And that's why its range goes out so far. That also gives it massive benefits in recoil and stability. And at some point, I expect that they will nerf it because it's just a massive outlier. I'm shocked, in fact, that it did not get nerfed. The Funnel Web has 1.4 zoom, which is 1 point more than most of the other submachine guns. Most of them are at 1.3. So it's slightly better. It's still not Multimach, but it's a little better than the typical. Now let's take a look at the other raw stats here. So range. Multimach has 36. Funnel Web has 45 base range. Huge advantage. Multimach for stability has 44. Funnel Web has 50. Not huge, but still a perk's worth of stability. Pretty decent advantage. Handling, they're both at 73. Exactly the same. Reload speed. Multimach at 33. Funnel Web at 38. Again, a slight advantage. Not a huge difference. But between that and the stability, it's almost like you have flared Magwell just for free. Aim assist. Multi-mox at 55, funnel webs at 54. So not a hugely meaningful difference. Obviously, slight point to multi-mox there. Recoil direction, again, not a huge difference here. Multi-mox is at exactly 100. Funnel web is at 96. They're both going to be extremely vertical in the recoil department. And then magazine size, multi-mox does have more in the mag. It's got 36. Funnel web, I believe, has only 31. So a slight difference there, but I think that trade-off is well worth it for the massive range and stability that you get, which are going to make this gun feel really good. Compared especially to your typical lightweight submachine gun. And that's before you start adding any stats from your perks in on top of it. Then we take a look at the perks, and we've got, you know, the usual selection of perks that can give you even more range and stability, which I would highly recommend. In the mag and barrel slots. And then in the trait slots, we've got, it's a mixed bag, but in that mixed bag are some really, really attractive looking perk combinations. Particularly, I have my eye on Perpetual Motion Rangefinder, which really seems like it's got a lot of potential. The gun can also roll with Elemental Capacitor, which in the age of Void 3.0 might just be your best friend. Because it is plus 18 to stability straight up. Pair that with Perpetual Motion, this gun is going to be like a laser beam. I mean, an absolute laser beam.
I do think that this now has me interested. So I looked at my roll, and probably the reason why I didn't like it is my roll is actually complete crap comparatively to what I see here. I am very excited to try a max range rangefinder roll, because I'm pretty sure that that can actually outrange the multi-mach that I have. That is actually pushing the damage fall off up to almost 20 meters. It's a little bit over 19 meters, which for any SMG that is not Shiura's is actually insane.
Yeah, there are some really phenomenal combinations with Hammer Forge, Accurized, and Range Masterwork. You could easily have your range at 72, and then you apply zoom. I mean, that's nuts. And you can have Perpetual Motion on that roll. And as long as you keep strafing while you're ADS'd, you're going to keep that bonus. It's got a lot, I think, to offer. Is it going to be better than Multi-Mach? I don't know. That might be a stretch. Multi-Mach has a lot of zoom. But is it going to be good enough to be worth having as an option when you want Multi-Mach, but you want it to be in the energy slot? Yeah, I think that's a definite yes.
A max range Multi-Mach, for fairness, now granted, the max range Multi-Mach has 17 stability. So you really need to be a pretty decent player to do that. But
not if it has dynamic sway reduction, you don't.
That's true. Not if it has dynamic sway reduction. But okay, so a max range Multi-Mach is actually hitting out to 25 meters. So mine is not, because mine is a dynamic sway reduction kill clip Multi-Mach. But even mine, I think, is still hitting out to, I want to say, what do I have? Yeah, I've got a range masterwork. I mean, mine is hitting out to 20 meters. So, and that's just because it has the good scope and a range masterwork. I have a pendant mag in the mag slot. I don't even have a good mag perk. So that's, you know, I don't know that it's going to be outranging Multi-Mach. So what I might do is I might try to go for a max stability build, see how that feels.
Yeah.
Although you can't get the Multi-Mach anymore, right? So I don't have a max range Multi-Mach, so I might as well go for a max range one of these too.
Yeah, everyone who is playing Iron Banner trying to get the max range Multi-Mach and just being unable to get a playable role of it, this is your, you know, your next best thing. So yeah, it's I can see why people are excited about it. This is one of those guns that just comes straight out of the gate, and it's like, hey, I'm better than everyone else. So yeah, it's something to be excited about.
Well, talking about vice weapons, the actual next one that I was going to talk about was Crate. And Crate is another vice weapon. This time it's a stasis auto rifle, so it's up in the kinetic slot. And it's I tried to use it for a bit in PvP, and I liked it. I'm not the biggest fan of rapid fire auto rifles in PvP, but I've actually had more fun with this gun in Headstone in PvP than any other gun that I've had Headstone with. Yes. There's something that's just unbelievably hilarious about killing someone with a 720 RPM auto rifle and seeing the Headstone crystal pop up. So it's very, very fun. And it's got some okay roles for PvP. You can get moving target in the trait slot. You can get Vorpal Weapon. Vorpal Weapon, I actually think, would be pretty nice against supers if you really feel like getting down and dangerous. But I've heard mixed things about Adagio. So here's the thing. So Cool Guy says that Adagio is bugged and it is not actually decreasing the rate of fire of Crate. I have also heard people say that in frame testing, it is decreasing the rate of fire, but the audio cue is not synced to it. So it sounds like it's firing at the normal 720 RPM, but it actually is firing for damage purposes at 600 RPM. I myself have not gotten a roll with the Adagio yet, so I haven't been able to test it. I'm sure the Destiny Science Discord channel has probably figured it out for themselves and will tell me when this releases. But so I've heard mixed things about that. So maybe don't go all in on getting an Adagio roll yet thinking you're cheating. As far as traits go, it doesn't have great trait options in trait one slot, but what it does have, which is absolutely hilarious, is overflow. Overflow, if you pick up special ammo, actually doubles the magazine size, which means that this gun can have 112 rounds in the magazine if you use overflow. That alone is enough to sell me on the weapon. You're telling me that I can have 112 rounds in the magazine. I'm not entirely sure that I want to use Focused Fury with that, because I think hitting 56 headshots is probably a bit much. But I would love to use that in PvE with like Vorpal Weapon on a yellow bar, or, I would put that on my Headstone roll and just go in and have a ton of fun in PvP.
Yeah.
Just basically treating it like a machine gun and mowing down people and forming crystals every which direction. So I don't know that this gun is going to become meta, but as far as having fun with a weapon, I think I have potentially had more fun with my Crate Headstone roll than I have a lot of other guns. And I think it's just the idea that it's a hilarious weapon. An auto rifle with 112 rounds in the magazine that creates crystals on critical hit kills.
Yeah, I've also had a couple of fun Crate rolls come my way, including the Headstone one that I ultimately decided not to keep. But it was fun while it lasted. It was a deep sight weapon for me that I farmed and then moved on from.
It died so that others may live.
It did.
I would also be remiss if I didn't point out that it actually has insane stats for a 720 RPM auto rifle. It is the best 720 RPM auto rifle stat-wise that we have pretty much in the game right now, like bar none. The base range is 40. No other 720 is over 35. The base stability is 62, which is, again, the highest, although only by a couple of points. The handling is 50, which is also the highest. The reload speed is 58, which is only second to the Reckless Oracle from the Garden of Salvation raid at 60. The aim assist is 78, which is second only to Chroma Rush at 80, but still very high comparatively. The lower ones are down at 66 or 72. Recoil direction is not good at 56. I have been rocking Arrowhead Break on mine, and that pretty much rectifies that problem for me. And then the magazine size is absolutely giant at well over 50. So it is a tremendously, tremendously fun weapon. Highly recommend you get one. Don't think it's going to be meta in Trials, but do think that it could be a ton of fun to at least just use and goof around with.
That's another one I think that they weren't afraid to give it some stats that were head and shoulders above what had come before. And that's always been an archetype that I've thought is a lot of fun, even though it's never truly been meta. There have been times when a good roll in the hands of a pretty decent player can still do some work in the Crucible. All right, let's see here. We are, I think, probably starting to push toward time for this podcast, so I'm gonna have to choose wisely here. I don't know if we're going to get through all of the guns that we wanted to talk about, but One that I would like to draw some attention to is under your skin. So this is a brand new precision frame bow that I have to say looks pretty appealing. And I've started looking toward other bows that I might be interested in playing with. Just, you know, on the off chance that Le Monarque does get nerfed. I did play with Le Monarque in the Crucible some this week. It's still great. I understand that some people on non-Hunter classes can do some really fun things with it right now. And I'm a little jealous, but I also have Oathkeepers, so I'm not that jealous. Anyways, Under Your Skin caught my eye. Specifically because it has this exciting brand new perk called Turnabout. And what this perk does is when you use this weapon to break the shield of a combatant or a guardian using their super, it'll grant you an overshield. And so I'm always thinking about ways to be more helpful about taking out enemy supers, especially right now it feels like people are being pretty aggressive about using these supers that recharge faster to get their supers up sooner in the game. And what I've found is that bows are actually pretty effective at punishing super use as long as you're paying attention to your cues and have a rough idea where the person is and where they're coming from, where they're going to. You can put some serious damage into somebody. So that got me pretty excited because the downside of fighting a super is usually that you do not have enough health to survive very long. So I'm very interested to see how effective that perk is. Otherwise, the gun just is pretty solid. So let's talk about some stats on bows real quick here. So Under Your Skin is a precision frame. So I'm just going to go ahead and kind of compare it generally here to the Peanut Gallery. So it has accuracy of 82, which is best in class for the precision frame bows. It has stability of 52. The only precision bow that has better base stability is No Turning Back, which I don't even know if you can get anymore. I don't think you can. Don't recognize that name off the top of my head. So very, very good, if not best in class, stability. And remember, stability affects how long you can hold the perfect draw on bows. We learned that in a previous episode with Chris Proctor. So definitely not a stat that you want to tank on your bows unless you're running Oathkeepers. Has handling of 60, which is, again, best in class. There are a few other precision bows that also have 60 handling, but none that have better. Reload speed is 46, which is the same as every other precision bow, and that's how fast you can knock another arrow after you've fired. Aim assist of 70, which is, again, not quite best in class, but pretty darn close. Point of the Stag is the only precision bow that has better base aim assist at 72, so not even that much better. And it's got a zoom of 1.8. Like every precision bow, it's got perfectly vertical recoil. If, you know, recoil is something that you think about on bows, I don't know why you would, but you might. Other perks that I was interested in playing with on this weapon. For PvE, adaptive munitions caught my eye. This weapon adapts its damage output and effectiveness against energy shields that don't match the weapon's damage type. So essentially, it's getting some kind of a damage increase against solar and arc shields, even though it's a void weapon, which makes it super versatile, especially in more difficult content or just content where there are a ton of shielded enemies and you want to be able to take them down. As far as PvP goes, it does have opening shot, which is a great way to guarantee that you hit the crit every single time with a precision bow. And it also has explosive head, which is certainly fun for PvE to be able to add some damage in. The other column has Archer's Tempo and Tunnel Vision, which are both super solid perks for a bow. I think Archer's Tempo is probably my preference because you get the benefit on a precision hit, which you're going to get all the time. Tunnel Vision, you actually have to get a kill before you get the benefit, so a little bit less appealing. But that's it. That's Under Your Skin.
It's it's going to be hard to pry me away from the Monarch as if I'm using a bow in PvP, but it's nice that there's other options out there for the discerning bow consumer.
Indeed.
Speaking of weapons that make people very angry when you use them in PvP, there are two new fusion rifles, and they both deserve a shout out. So I'm going to wrap up with these two new fusion rifles. We'll let you pick one more weapon, and then we'll call it an evening. I'm going to do these both at the same time. We actually have the Snorri FR5, which if you thought the main ingredient was a problem, the Snorri FR5 is really something special. Now, it only has its one base zoom, which is 1.7 times, which is still pretty good for a fusion rifle. It's a good gun. It's a stat monster. It's every bit as good as main ingredient is when you're looking at fusion rifles.
It's on my list as well.
Yeah. So it's got 65 range, main ingredients is 63. It's got 55 stability, main ingredients is 54. 43 handling, main ingredients 38. 40 reload speed compared to main ingredients 32. The inventory is 38, main ingredients 40. That's about the same. The aim assist is 62 compared to main ingredients 59. The recoil direction is 79 compared to main ingredients 73. So really, what this is basically saying is, hey, please stop using main ingredient and use Snorri instead. Now, does it have Tap the Trigger? No, but Tap the Trigger did get a nerf recently, a pretty heavy nerf on fusion rifles. It's a perk that we've called out before as really kind of being an inappropriate perk for fusion rifles based on how it works. Main ingredient usage does seem to have dropped off a little bit. I think it's still really, really, really strong. And Snorri, by comparison, is also really, really, really strong. What's nice about it is that you can get firmly planted. You can get high impact reserves. If you're looking for dueling perks, just perks that are going to be with you every single time you enter an engagement with a little bit of work, right? Not necessarily every time. You know, you have to crouch or slide. You have to keep the magazine under three. If you can do those two things, firmly planted and high impact reserves is going to make this gun an absolute monster. My personal preference is I like to lean a little bit more heavily on stability than I do on range. It's already got a good bit of range. Stat-wise, adding more range onto it doesn't have the biggest effect, but adding stability onto it is definitely something you can feel. There's also a really cool new perk called Successful Warm-Up, which every final blow increases your charge or draw speed. That is a very strong perk to pair with heating up. So heating up, final blows of this weapon increase accuracy and stability while improving vertical recoil. If you can get heating up and successful warm up on the same roll, and you can get a kill, this gun is a monster after a kill. Super fast charge time, really accurate, great vertical recoil. If you've already paired it with stability, it's basically just a flat burst. It is very, very, very good. I don't know how many people are necessarily going to have this roll. I don't think that this is a craftable weapon. But if you do get this roll, I highly recommend you take it into PvP and give it a shot. It probably feels every bit as good as a Tap the Trigger main ingredient. But it does require a kill to do it. So I think it's probably a fair trade-off, but it's still going to be very, very strong.
This is also one that I am definitely going to be keeping an eye out for a couple of different roles. I'm a little interested in trying out a surplus role. But yeah, like you, I'm watching high impact reserves and successful warm-up in that final trait slot. Really excited. Reservoir Burst is also, I think, a pretty decent perk to have for PvE. Less so for PvP, although it is, on occasion, hilarious in PvP. But you do have to collect up the ammo for it. So I'm going to... you've got another fusion rifle you wanted to shout out.
Yeah, likely suspect. I don't need to poke on it a ton. Stat-wise, it's actually not super great. It kind of flails in comparison to Null Composure, which is the pinnacle weapon from before, and even really to Zealot's Reward, which is from the Garden of Salvation raid. So I'm not really going to go over the stats too much, just because we're kind of running out of time here. But I do want to point out that it is craftable. It is a rapid fire. Rapid fires are strong, like rapid fire pulse rifles. I really only see them being used by people who are pretty decent at what they're doing. But I want to point out that this weapon has golden tricorn. And because it is a void weapon, we are all on void right now. Golden tricorn is a massive, massive bonus to damage, a 50% damage bonus. If you can get golden tricorn active on likely suspect, this thing absolutely melts. And on top of that, it's got some really good perks and trait slot one, firmly planted, perpetual motion, slideways, heating up. Highly, highly recommend trying to find a heating up golden tricorn build, or trying to find a heating up golden tricorn roll, or a perpetual motion golden tricorn roll, or a slideways golden tricorn roll. They're all quite good. Golden tricorn is really the key there. If I had to recommend successful warm up, I'd probably recommend it on Snorri, but I don't know how you can pass up the possibility of getting a rapid fire fusion with a 50% damage bonus in PvP or PvE.
Yeah, that was one that is actually near the very top of my list of chase weapons. And I knew you were going to mention it, which is why I held off. But man, if I can pick that up with perpetual golden tricorn, I'm going to be in heaven, because I run Cartesian, and this thing, I think, has better stats than Cartesian does base. So I'm pretty psyched for the upgrade. Even if you don't get the 50%, golden tricorn by itself is a 15% damage bonus, which is not nothing. Anything that you can do to push out either the range or push down the bolts that you need to kill someone makes a massive difference in the effectiveness of these weapons. And you have so many bolts that you're throwing out that these damage bonuses really do have the potential to, like, matter.
It actually has slightly worse stats than Cartesian, except for stability, where it has 5 more stability.
I'll take it. That's a win. Now I'm very excited about that. But to try to wrap things up fast, the last gun I want to mention is the Ragnhild D, the aggressive shotgun. And I'm going to mention it because I'm very interested in crafting both PvP and PvE versions of this gun. I don't normally look at aggressive shotguns as PvE weapons, but I feel like there might be a place for it in some of the areas where enemies have a little more HP, because it has some really solid perk combinations. Specifically, like, in this, you know, again, if we're not the PvE podcast, I'm not talking about this for in-game content. This is like, you know, for like lesser Nightfalls, the legendary campaign, stuff that I'm doing for fun where I might want to use a shotgun. But if I can get a subsistence demolitionist role, I will be super duper happy to endlessly charge and fire this gun without ever reloading. So really pretty interesting there. It also has, I think, a pretty solid possibility for PvP with full choke, assault mag, perpetual motion, and arc, the elemental capacitor on an arc subclass. Your handling is going to be crazy good with the arc elemental capacitor and then perpetual motion. And I know a lot of people aren't that huge on stability for shotguns, but I think for 2v1 situations, it's going to help you out to be able to keep the gun under control more easily and make sure that you're not losing too much aim assist due to the really terrible stability that these guns have. So anyway, there you have it, Ragnhild. Lower down on my list, but still something that I'm interested in playing with.
And it is worth pointing out that the Ragnhild has a weird zoom amount for shotguns, and it does seem to have an abnormal damage falloff distance because of that weird range amount. Don't know if that is intended or a bug, but I can confirm, I believe Ivan in the Destiny Discord was testing it and found that it does have a different damage falloff. So if you are looking for something to replace your Felwinters, Ragnhild is probably that something for you.
Yeah, sorry, that's a good call. I forgot to mention that. So Felwinters, for comparison, has 1.2 zoom. Ragnhild has 1.6. And we talk about comparing multi-mach to other submachine guns. This is zoom-wise sort of the same thing. It's a lot.
And ADS was supposed to not affect shotguns, but it does for Ragnhild, which is why, again, I'm not sure if it's a bug, but it does. So interesting thing. We'll keep an eye on that. They might nerf it. They might leave it alone. But if you're looking for a shotgun, if you've been feeling like your shotguns just can't map people anymore, maybe it's about time to look for a Ragnhild. So that is it for episode 250. Heck of a 250th episode. Can you believe that? We're a quarter way to 1,000 episodes.
Man, it's nuts.
Just around the corner.
Yeah,
but like I said, we're bringing this episode early. I'm going to be gone all the way until the 15th. So next week, there will not be an episode. Highly recommend you check out PVE podcast. Highly recommend, if you guys like Star Wars, that you go back and listen to some of the back catalog of Star Wars Beneath Twin Suns. That is our Star Wars show. We have wrapped up Book of Boba Fett now. So if you are interested to hear our thoughts on that show, which are mostly positive, you can go take a listen to that. Or check out any of the episodes on Rebels, Clone Wars, Mandalorian, any of that stuff. And yeah, we'll be back, I guess, on the 17th with another episode. And hopefully we'll be breaking down maybe a new set of raid weapons. I know the raid race is coming this weekend. I will not be able to take part in that, but I think a lot of people in this community will be. So exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. I will not be taking part myself, but I'll definitely be keeping track of what's going on, paying a little bit of attention. Yeah, I think raid weapons would be a great way to come back. All right. Peace.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Bye. We'll be right back.